Chapter 3. The Disappearing Bison. Two bison from our herd have vanished over the past month, Jasmine Creek told me over dinner. I assume they were stolen, but I can't guarantee it. Jasmine was the foreperson for the Oy Vey Corral's bison operations. She was in her 30s and was still dressed for work, in dusty blue jeans, boots, and a well-worn cowboy hat. The Krautheimers had arranged for a welcome barbecue for their guests, and they had invited their ranch hands as well. In addition to Jasmine, there were three men named Gavin, Aaron, and Zach. We were all eating on the porch of the ranch house, which afforded a great view of the bison herd. The bison were also dining. As herbivores, they ate almost constantly. There was an endless chorus of grunts and belches from them as they chewed. Jasmine's mother, Daisy, ran the Krautheimer household and cooked as well. She was overseeing a large grill loaded with ribs, steaks, and sausages, all of which she had carved from one of the ranch's bison. It always struck me as odd to eat meat on the very ranch that it had come from. But for the McCrackens and the Krautheimers, who had grown up doing it, it was a natural part of life. Summer had once told me that, if anything, more people ought to see where their meat came from, so they would have a better understanding of what it took to put food on their tables. So I had piled my plate high with ribs and steak, along with corn on the cob and heaping scoops of Daisy's homemade coleslaw and potato salad. The Krautheimers had asked Jasmine to sit with Summer and me at the kids' end of the table to explain what was happening with their bison. Evan and Melissa Krautheimer were also with us, while all our parents dined with Pete and Ray and the other ranch hands. Pete seemed to be uncomfortable with eating an animal that had been grazing nearby a day before and had opted only for the vegetarian side dishes. In addition, his allergies had flared up and his nose was so raw from blowing it that he looked like a proboscis monkey. And if that wasn't bad enough, every mosquito in Montana appeared to have targeted him. I hadn't suffered a single bite, but his face was a minefield of little welts. Why do you think the bison were stolen? I asked Jasmine. Because I can't find them anywhere, Jasmine replied, and I've looked. Everywhere? Melissa asked doubtfully, gnawing on a rib. We have over 6,000 acres here. I'm well aware of that, Jasmine said, looking slightly offended. In fact, I'm pretty sure I know this land better than anyone in your family. The bison couldn't just be in some distant part of the property, I asked, seeing as this ranch is so big. Bison are communal animals. Jasmine took a sip of her beer. They tend to stay with their herds. But even so, the hands and I have swept the ranch as well as we could. We didn't find any stragglers, and the fence is intact all the way around, all 20 miles of it. Maybe Sasquatch killed them, Summer suggested, or another grizzly did. Jasmine shook her head. I doubt a grizzly would go after a bison in the first place. Even the red dogs are too much effort for them, especially when there's so much other food around. But even if a bear did make a kill, there'd be evidence. A carcass would lure vultures, like that. She pointed off in the distance with her fork. Sure enough, to the north, several dozen vultures wheeled lazily in the sky. That's because a deer got hit by an RV on the northern boundary road, Jasmine explained. I know because I checked it out. If we had a dead bison, there'd be a cloud of vultures like that over the ranch. Plus, a bear doesn't eat the whole bison. Something would be left. Skin, hooves, maybe some of the bones. I haven't seen any sign of a kill anywhere. Instead, these bison just vanished. Maybe space aliens took them, Evan said, like for some sort of intergalactic zoo. Summer and I looked to Evan warily. We hadn't spent enough time with him to know if he was being serious or not. They could get a lot of wildlife right here, Evan went on. It's like one-stop shopping. They could pick up some bison, some cougars, some bobcats, some grizzlies, and whatever Melissa is. He burst into laughter. His sister didn't think it was so funny. You can be such a horse's patoot sometimes, she said, and bounced a dinner roll off his head. Evan loaded a spoonful of potato salad and was preparing to fire it at her, catapult style, when his father snapped, Kids, that's no way to behave in front of company. I'm not doing anything, Evan declared with fake innocence, then shoved the spoonful of potato salad into his mouth, as though he had been intending to eat it all along. Evan appeared to be in the middle of a growth spurt. The arms of his shirt and the legs of his jeans were an inch shorter than they should have been. He was nice enough, although he seemed more interested in playing video games than getting to know me. That made a certain amount of sense, though. I probably wouldn't have been thrilled to have a random kid suddenly staying at my house either. Melissa was 3 years older than me, and 2 years older than Summer. I had caught the end of her horseback riding practice right before dinner. Her specialty was barrel racing, where she galloped her horse at top speed through a looping path around three barrels. When I had first come to Texas, I had thought there wasn't much to riding a horse, seeing as the horse appeared to be doing all the work. But after riding a few times with Summer, I had learned that a good rider needed to be an excellent athlete, and that was certainly the case with Melissa. She was very talented and seemed to be in sync with her horse. I said, You guys must feel really lucky, getting to live here. Evan laughed, then paused. Oh, wait, he said. Were you being serious? Of course, I said. This ranch is awesome. Want to trade places? Evan asked. I live miles away from all my friends. The cell reception stinks, and you can't walk 5 feet without stepping in buffalo poop. I live in a mobile home next to the employee parking lot for a theme park, I said. Really? Evan asked. Forget trading places. Your home might actually be crummier than mine. Melissa gave a dramatic sigh. You have no idea how lucky you are, Evan. Can you imagine what life was like for our great-great-grandparents out here? Your friends are like 5 minutes away. It took our ancestors hours to get to town, and they lived in a log cabin without heat, or air conditioning, or electricity, or plumbing, or anything, really. So when was this place built? Summer asked, waving toward the ranch house. In the 1920s, Melissa replied. The original log cabin is still on the property, right over there. She pointed across the field. Sure enough, there was a log cabin nestled in the trees down by the river. It looked straight out of a picture book about Abraham Lincoln's childhood. Summer wasn't looking at the log cabin, though. She was scrutinizing the large ranch house carefully. It's an awfully big jump from a log cabin to a place like this, she observed. I guess your family did really well with ranching. Not exactly, Melissa said. Our great-grandparents had a side business that covered the bills. They were bootleggers during Prohibition. Really? I asked. All the way out here? This was a way station, Melissa explained. The alcohol came down from Canada and then passed through here on its way to bigger cities. Although I hear the folks on the frontier drank plenty. Our great-grandparents didn't really run the operation. They just provided a place to hide everything. Some people say that Al Capone himself helped pay for this house. There's a secret storage area for booze under the kitchen. I can show it to you after dinner if you want. Sure, Summer agreed. That'd be awesome. It's not that big a deal, Evan said dismissively. It's just a basement. A secret basement that Al Capone used to store illegal alcohol in, Summer corrected him. My house doesn't have anything like that. My house barely even has a kitchen, I said. Hey, kids. Daisy Creek was suddenly at our side, bearing a platter heaped with more meat. Anyone want seconds? I had barely made a dent in the enormous first serving that she had given me. I'm all right, thanks, but this is delicious. You should thank Jasmine. She's the one who raises all this meat. Daisy beamed brightly at her daughter. To my eyes, Daisy didn't look old enough to have a daughter Jasmine's age. She was youthful and petite, although, despite her small size, she was tough as nails. Earlier in the day, I'd seen her haul a 30-pound bundle of wood for the grill up to the porch as easily as most people would have hoisted a sack of cotton balls. No one else at our end of the table needed any more food, although Gavin and Zach had already polished off their plates, so Daisy headed that way to give them seconds. I returned my attention to Jasmine. How long has your mother been working here? Since she was a little girl. Her parents worked for the Krautheimers too, and my family has been in this area since long before any ranchers were here.
Jasmine's Tukadika, Melissa explained.
I looked at her blankly, and so did Summer. It's a branch of the Shoshone tribe, Jasmine explained. My people have lived in the Yellowstone area for as long as anyone knows. Sometimes folks refer to us as the sheep eaters.
Oh, Summer said, that I've heard of. There was a sheep eater war in the 1800s, although it really wasn't a war. It was the U.S. government coming up with an excuse to kill Native Americans.
That's right. Jasmine seemed impressed that Summer knew about this. The tribe was almost wiped out. We never even got our own reservation. Our land was stolen to create Yellowstone. Instead, we got shipped off to other reservations in the area. Although, at least we got to stay somewhat close to where we were from. Plenty of eastern U.S. tribes didn't even get to do that. They got booted off their land and sent to places like Oklahoma that they didn't have any connection to at all. Melissa said, basically, the Native Americans got treated like garbage. Her saying this seemed a bit ironic to me, given that she was certainly living on land that had once been inhabited by Native Americans. But then it occurred to me that I lived on land that had once been inhabited by Native Americans, as did everyone else in the Americas. We were called sheep eaters because we specialized in catching the wild sheep that live in this area, Jasmine explained. Although, of course, bison were important to us too, as they were with so many tribes throughout the West. I came from a long line of bison managers, although the way I do it is a lot different from how my ancestors did. Mr. Krautheimer said there's almost 800 bison on this ranch, I said. 786, Jasmine reported, at last count. I asked, with that many animals, how did you even realize that two were missing? I mean, they all pretty much look the same. I didn't mean this only in reference to bison. Since my mother was a field biologist, I knew that it could be hard to tell animals apart, even in populations that were heavily researched. Mom told me that it had taken her nearly a year to learn each of her gorillas by sight in the wild, and there were only a few dozen of them. It took us a while to confirm they were gone, Jasmine admitted, which I suppose is what whoever stole them was counting on. I have ear tags on all of them, with a different number for each animal. But it's still a chore to keep track. We have to do a census every few days. You mean you just count them? I asked.
Yes.
Jasmine finished stripping a rib clean and dropped it onto her plate. And if we come up with the wrong number, then we do it again the next day, and the next, which was how we realized we were too short.
Couldn't you just put microchips in them? Summer asked. That's what we do at our ranch.
I suspect you might have more money for your operation than we do, Jasmine replied. If we had the chips, then I could prove the bison had been stolen. But for now, well,
All I can say is that there's two we can't find. I don't even know which two bison are missing. I don't know their ages or their genders. I can't even say when they were taken, only that it's been a month since we noticed they were gone. I chewed on a piece of steak thoughtfully. So, you don't have any proof that they were actually stolen, and if they were, you don't know when it happened.
Right.
That's not going to be easy to solve, I said, although I could already feel myself growing intrigued by the challenge. I had solved quite a few mysteries over the last year, most of which had been connected to the animals at Fun Jungle. For the last few cases, I had balked at the idea of getting involved, as crime solving was often dangerous. But now, to my surprise, I simply felt excited. I didn't know if this was because I had become more confident in myself, or if it was because I figured I couldn't possibly end up in more trouble than I had in the past. But something had changed in me.
Do you have any clues at all? Summer asked Jasmine.
Summer had helped me solve almost every one of my cases and had a very deductive mind as well.
No, Jasmine admitted, although I have some ideas about how it might have happened.
Like what? I asked.
It'd be easier to show you.
Jasmine looked toward the setting sun, judging how much light was left in the day.
Why don't we do it tomorrow morning?
All right, I agreed.
Great, Jasmine said. Can you ride a horse?
Of course, Summer said. I didn't answer quite so enthusiastically, as my horseback riding skills weren't very good. I was about to ask if there was another way to get around the ranch, but before I could, a pickup truck came down the long driveway toward the house. Since the drive was unpaved, a plume of dust rose in the truck's wake. The truck looked as though it might have a few hundred thousand miles on it. It was coated with dirt and dings.
That's my father, Jasmine observed, then looked to Summer. He must have your mom.
Summer sprang to her feet excitedly. She hadn't seen her mother in nearly 2 weeks, as Candace had been in New York City to appear at some fashion shoots and charity events. J.J. McCracken got up as well, just as eager to see Candace. The truck parked beside the house. Jasmine's father got out first. Arturo Creek showed his age a little more than Daisy did. He had gray hair and was slightly stooped, but he exhibited the same youthful energy as his wife. He was also quite a gentleman, as evidenced by the fact that he came around to the passenger side to open the door for Candace. I noticed there was a third person in the truck, in the back seat of the extended cab. I couldn't quite make out who it was, but figured it had to be Karina Soontornvat, the McCracken's pilot. She had flown the jet to New York to pick up Candace and needed a place to spend the night. Lots of employers might have put their pilot up in a cheap motel, but JJ considered Karina a friend and had invited her to join us. The truck was jacked up on large tires, so there was a good-sized drop from the cab to the ground. Candace took Arturo's hand to steady herself as she got out. Candace made no secret of the fact that she preferred the city to the country, and she often passed on trips like this. But Summer had told me that Candace enjoyed the Oy Vey Corral. However, at the moment, she was dressed even less appropriately for her surroundings than Pete Thwacker was. She must have gone directly to the airport from a fancy event because she was wearing a couture dress and lots of jewelry. Somewhere en route, she had swapped her dress shoes for sneakers that she could get dirty, which was a shrewd move. When she alit on the ground from the truck, tiny clouds of dust rose around her feet.
Mom!
Summer exclaimed and ran out to meet her. JJ started toward her as well, but then stopped suddenly, right beside me, as though something had upset him.
Dang it, he muttered under his breath. Why is she wearing that?
At first I assumed he meant the dress, but then Candace turned to face Summer, and her necklace caught the sunlight.
It was a big necklace, in what I would later learn is known as the princess style, probably because princesses tend to have lots of money. Rather than being a single strand of silver or gold, it was encrusted with jewels for its entire length, all the way around Candace's neck. Most of the jewels were small diamonds, which sparkled like a river in the sunshine. But at the very front was an enormous sapphire. The stone was the size of an egg and an iridescent dark blue that appeared to glow from within. I didn't know much about jewelry, but I knew the necklace had to be expensive. JJ was obviously upset that Candace had brought it to the ranch, although I thought he was overreacting. But it turned out, JJ was right to be concerned.